Conversation number 6 continued. Miss Gibb, when the previous tape ran out, you were talking about the use of a grey-leaved plant for medicinal purposes. Could you go on about that, please?
Yes. I think doctors used it a good deal. It was called rue, and it was grey but not velvety. And it had a most peculiar scent, not very enticing. But I think it was used quite a lot in medicine in the old days. And we grew quite a lot of it. I don't know why, because I can't think of any use that it was put to here, unless it was that it was there if it would be wanted or needed.
And what was its medicinal purpose?
Well, I think it was used to stop diarrhea. Mm-hmm.
Another question that Johnny Krellin thinks would be very interesting would be, what sort of poultry of all kinds did you keep here at the Grove when you were young?
Well, of course, I suppose what Granny had were perhaps a mixed bunch, but there were black Hamburgs and brown Hamburgs.
Yes.
And she had tried Dorkings, but the climate didn't suit them. They were much grown in the south of England at that time. And then we had Plymouth Rocks. I remember the first one coming with old Miss Mercer, who brought it as a present to Granny. It was somewhere about the New Year or something. And
what sort of date?
Now, when did she die? Must have been about 1883.
So you had Hamburgs, Dorkings, Plymouth Rocks. Any others?
Yes. Oh, and Leghorns, of course, were in great favour then, because they laid extremely well, but they were no use as table birds. And the Plymouth Rocks were very good for table birds. But they didn't lay so well.
Yeah, give me this book.
Well, that lady is.
What is this book? What is this book, Miss Gibb? Is it a very old book?
Oh, yes, it's a very old book. It's a very old book on poultry. I wondered what that bird was.
Oh, I've turned him over. But look, I found Dorkings here.
Yes. Because I can remember a bird very like that.
Oh, a Brahma pullet.
That's it, Brahma.
You had those too, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, a Brahma pullet.
First prize at Birmingham, 1871.
Yes, well, that would be it.
And the Dorking, which you don't get nowadays.
No.
I see that the book here says that it says John Bull can fight on an empty stomach, but he much prefers to fill it first. And the Dorking Hen is a contribution to the process which no one need despise.
Yes.
So they were...
They were beautiful table birds.
They were a table bird, yes, were they?
Beautiful. But they didn't, I believe, they didn't lay a great many eggs.
And this is rather interesting because here is a brief article about the Plymouth Rocks.
Yes.
Which it says are a cross between a Cochin China cockerel with a Dorking and a couple of other things.
Yes.
And it came from America.
Yes.
And the book says that only one or two imports of Plymouth Rocks have yet reached this country, one being sent over for the Birminghamshire of 1872.
Yes.
So you must have had very early.
Yes. Well, of course, this old Miss Mercer, who lived down at Pooldooey on her own, had a sister in America, Miss Teresa. And Miss Teresa either came to visit the one that lived here and brought with her, or in some way, or brought eggs of Plymouth Rocks. And they were new in the island then. That must have been about 1883 or 85 or somewhere about like that time. And she brought one that she had hatched out, you see, to Granny.
What,
and I can remember I can remember her arriving with a circular cloak on, and she had this hen under her arm, sitting comfortably on her arm. She made such pets of her hens, and it arrived safely and was, and I think it must have been Clucky, because it was taken into a small hen house that we had where the old safe is now, opposite the back door. And I think she was set on eggs to produce more.
And how many did you end up with of these Plymouth Rocks?
Oh, I wouldn't like to say that.
Well, 12 or...
Very likely.
Mm. And were these table birds too?
They were very good for table, but they were very good layers also, and said to be very good mothers.
I see that the book here says the fowl is juicy and good for the table, and a
yes,
capital layer, and grows fast.
Yes, oh yes.
And for its economic qualities, it very closely resembles the Brahma and is an active forager, and it does not generally stay up so late from roost.
Yes, well, you see, they were new to Granny anyway then. She hadn't any, and Miss Mercer brought her this one, and I think must have brought her eggs, because after that we had quite a few on the yard for years.
And did you feed hens in those days, or were they like the Chinese hens, they found their own food?
Oh, no, they were fed.
They were fed.
And I can remember Granny going out every morning after breakfast. This was before she was quite so old, you see, and supervising the cook, mixing the hen's food and giving it to them while it was still slightly warm.
And did you keep them wired off, or
no,
did they...
No, they were allowed to wander. There was wire netting put up if the field on that side, if it was in grain, if it was in oats or barley, there was wire put on the gate then so that the hens couldn't get in. Otherwise, they were allowed to wander round, but not in the garden.
No. And what about other poultry, like geese and ducks and... turkeys?
No, Granny never bothered with geese or turkeys. She had a few ducks, but Not a great many. Hens were her speciality. Alice went in for turkeys. Mm. When Auntie said she was going to give up hens, Alice said, well, I'll take the hens on. And you can buy the eggs from me.
Did she make some money?
She didn't make money out of it because she gave too many away. But we kept hens anyway. Alice said, she said, we think it awful to have to go and buy eggs.
Mm-hmm. And one last question. The well.
Yes.
Johnny says, where exactly is it? And did it ever run dry in the summer? And what did you do when it did?
Well, it very rarely went quite dry. We generally got enough for drinking water. Because Will always said he was sure we'd get ill from drinking the dregs, but we didn't. It's exactly underneath the window of the kitchen, nearly in the cellar. And that's why that wall is always damp.
To the left-hand side of the back door as you go out.
Well,
as you go out into the yard on the left-hand side, is it?
Well, yes. Well, it's round the corner from the back window. You see, there's a trough there, the horse trough, where the horse and the cattle drank, and the pump is alongside there, and you pumped in. And Duncan was looking at it last summer when he was over, but the cage inside, try and find out if there's any man who understands old pumps and wants a new cage and a new thing for bringing it up. George Harrison did put a new wood in at one time, but he didn't know how to pack it properly. And I remember asking the old man in Clegg's how you packed the forgotten what they call it, the thing that pulls up the water from a well in a pump. And it was tow, rosin, and tallow. And he said, nothing else stands the wear. Hmm. But it wants a new box and a new everything. But there is a more modern pump in the scullery. And it wants soak fitted in some way. And it's one of those that you work like this.
Mm.
It really was put in order to hoist water to the cistern on the roof for the bath and the high pressure boiler. And then when we got town water, we ceased to use it, which was a mistake because we ought to have kept something to keep the water, especially in winter time, out of lower in that well, because that wall in the kitchen is always damp, you see. Mm. And the mason said, well, it's ground damp. What else can you expect?
Mm. I'll just repeat that.
Yes.
I was wrong then about where the pump is. If you go out of the back door and
yes.
you turn right towards the drive,
yes.
and it's right again.
Underneath the back window.
Underneath the back window,
The kitchen window,
mm-hmm.
not the scullery window, the kitchen window.
I see.
And there's a horse trough, a big, hollowed out of sandstone, a big sandstone horse trough there.
Only good.
Mm-hmm.
Conversation number 7 with Miss Gibb of the Grove Lazare.
I think I'd better go and...
Miss Gibb, I wonder whether it would be interesting and you would be able to pick some year when you were a young lady, not too old, but equally not too young, and whether you could describe in detail... the whole day, from the time you got up in the morning, exactly what you did, and right throughout the day until you went to bed. If you could do that, I'm sure it would give us a picture of life at the Grove in a particular year?
Take the summer that was such a wonderful summer, and one of the days when a holiday, and
which year was this?
And the we had to, after Granny died, we had plenty of work to do with regards to the garden and the pony and so on, though not in the house, for we always had a very good maid.
Which year was this, Miss Gibb? Roughly.
Well, roughly speaking, Granny died in, well, say 1900.
Right, all right, 1900. Well, now, when did you get up in the morning? What happened?
Well, we got up about 8 o'clock, I think. Now, wait a minute. Of course, breakfast was ready when we came down.
Were you called? Did somebody knock you up?
No, I think in earlier years we were called with jugs of hot water. Mm-hmm. But
right, you jugs of hot water then.
Yes, because we had, I think it was 1922 really, when we had the bath put in,
yeah,
and then got town water. And, I don't think we did anything much before breakfast. We had our breakfast. And then there was the pony to be fed, and the hens to be fed, and the greenhouses to be opened, and all that kind of thing. And then I went into the kitchen to see what we're going to have to start the kind of dinner. Auntie did nothing by that time. And, she'd never done anything all her life but direct. They didn't know what it was to do. She embroidered most beautifully, made altar cloths for St. Paul's, and one for St. Olive's, and one for Bellure, and, you know, that kind of thing. And then, if it was what we called our holiday month, we perhaps took her to Ramsey to do a little bit of shopping in the morning after the sort of preliminaries were done. And then the rest of the day was ours to do as we liked.
And when you say took her to Ramsey, took her in the trap?
Yes.
And did you drive personally?
Yes. Generally, because Alice was generally very busy with the garden and the vegetables and the putting things ready for a picnic. One collected the buns and the various things, or generally they were what we called cup and bun picnics. Well, we bought for ourselves and for the cousins, and generally for the Bella Currys, because Mrs. Crillin was an invalid then, and she used to send a note in, and by John or Pad or one of them, and tell us, will you do so and so and so and so, and get them their share ready for the picnic, you see. Which we did. And then after about 2 o'clock, we'd have a midday meal, and about 2 o'clock, we'd all set off. That summer, there were 3 holiday cousins, the Broadbelt boys, and 4 boys from Bella Curry. Well, Gorgie didn't always come. He was so keen on fishing that he didn't always attend the bicycle picnics. And you had to get, and 3 cousins, so that there were 9 boys as a rule, and we had to produce 9 girls as companions for them. There was Valerie, And
it's Valerie McGay, is it?
Yes. She was Valerie Lemoten those days, and Pad, you know, Will Crellin was her sweetheart. She was married to him first, you know. And then, of course, he went in the war. And Nora Carr and Lucy Tellett, who afterwards married Ridley Makepeace, who was another holiday cousin. And I don't know. Of course, Madge. Funny how I... And Gertrude Rigby. She was Gertrude Lamote. She was Eric's, the Deemster's sister. Mm-hmm. She had two girls. Well, the younger one of them was there that summer, Joan Rigby. And she picnicked with us. Anyhow, there were generally about 20 of us all together. And we set forth on bicycles for Carlane Mills, was a great place. Oh, the two Watson girls were there too. They gathered sticks and things. The tea was brewed in bags in billy cans. And the billy cans were introduced to us by the Tears, who had been brought up in Australia and were here then for some years.
And did you make your fires with the Manx fisherman's lighter?
The duty of the boys to go and gather driftwood on the shores, or if we were going to an inland place where we didn't think there'd be any wood, we took, in the pony cart, we took sticks and a bit of paper and odds and mostly wood. And it was the duty of the boys to make the fire. And these billy cans were slung over it and had to boil. I remember that year, jammy buns were very popular, and also sugar buns. Wattleworths, who were confectioners at the time, were great makers of these sugar buns. They were very light and fluffy with sugar tops and very popular. Then we used to get also we called them halfpenny buns, but of course they're tuppence or threepence now. And those we split and buttered and put jam in. Those also were very popular. I remember on one occasion a small girl sitting down, "I'm going to sit near the jammy buns," she said. And she sat down by them, and she'd eaten three before you could say knife. And I said to her, "Oh, Meg, don't be too greedy, you know. There are other people like jammy buns as well as you do." She frowned at me, said nothing, but she turned her attention to something else. She was an only one. My cousin, she was. She was an only one, and her mother had given in to her in every way. If Meg liked jammy buns, she would be allowed to make her tea of them and consider nobody else. The picnic she had to learn to share did her good.
And then when you got home?
Well, we sometimes played games. Sometimes if it was very warm, we just wandered about or sat and talked or, you know, just didn't do much. But I remember sometimes they were keen. We used to play Terzi.
What was Terzi?
Twos and threes. Do you know it under that name?
Not
well, you're standing two, one behind the other, and there are two, one being chased and another chasing. Mm. And when the one felt she'd run enough in and out, she stood in front of her two. Well, then the back one ran.
Yes, I know it. And then when you got home in the evening, did you...
Well, when we got home in the evening, then it was a very fine summer. We tidy up and had the evening meal, and then we'd go down to listen to news band on the promenade. That was, yes, before the First World War. They were Germans, and they came over every summer from the middle of July to the, I think it was the beginning of July, to the middle of September. And everybody walked on the South Promenade and sat about and listened to them. And during the day, they used to go round and play at different places, perhaps in front of an hotel, or perhaps at somebody's house who was generally rather glad to hear them and gave them money. They play in the Zaire Road and collect from houses each side, you see, and so on. And we looked forward to their coming always. And they sometimes the days the boat came to the direct boat came to Ramsey, they'd play at the end of the pier where people were all sitting waiting for the boat to come in, you know. And at 10 o'clock we went into Mrs. What was her name? How funny. Anyhow, we went into what is Melanie's now, I think,
oh, yes.
By Bruce there.
Yes.
And that was at Cayley, Mrs. Cayley. And she didn't mind as long as we cleared out by 11, that was all that mattered. And we used to sit there from 10 till about 5 minutes to 11, and then we all made for home.
And when you made for home, did you...
We walked.
You walked?
Yes.
You didn't have the pony and cart then?
No. Oh, no, we walked.
Now, tell me, going back to the morning, after breakfast or before breakfast, did you have prayers, for instance, in this house?
Yes, we did earlier, but not... No, now, wait a minute.
Well, when your granny was alive, for instance, did you have prayers then?
Long after Granny, too. But after Auntie took to having breakfast in bed,
You escaped, yes. And were the prayers in the drawing room or in the dining room here?
They were in here.
Of course,
in Granny's day, there were two maids, you see.
And did the maids come
and
in?
And they came in and had listened to prayers and that. Sure, the cook was thinking of the breakfast perhaps that was sizzling or something. However, I don't know. But anyway, oh yes, the books are up there, I think, with the prayers in.
And who took the prayers? Your auntie?
Granny read them as long as she came down to breakfast. But I think after she was 80, I don't think she came. I think she had her breakfast in bed. And Auntie certainly had her breakfast in bed after she was that. But Auntie lived to be 98.
Mm.
And I didn't know whether I should carry on with prayers or not. But Alice said, I'm not going to listen to you reading prayers. So we gave up prayers. By that time, of course, we only had one maid, and she hadn't time to come to prayers.
No.
We gave up prayers.
And what time was lunch?
About 1 o'clock.
And what did you have for lunch?
Well, it was a midday dinner, you see. We had... there would be one or two vegetables and either roast beef or boiled beef or cold beef or quite often pork. Pork was very cheap in those days. When Auntie was young, pork was only 6 pence a pound. Because everybody kept pigs. And the road up just below, just a little, a wee bit further up than below a bridge, there was a lane going up. And there were the townsfolk who collected swill had from the hotels, had their pigs up there. And I don't think they had to pay any rent or anything. I don't know what they did about that. But I do know that there were 8 or 10 pigsties up there.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a pudding after the meat?
A bit, pardon?
Did you have pudding after the meat?
Oh, yes. Always a pudding.
But you didn't have soup before, anything like
no,
that?
No, not often.
No.
The meat and a pudding and bread and cheese if you wanted it.
Mm-hmm. And water to drink?
Water to drink, yes.
Did you have coffee or tea afterwards?
No.
And if you were staying at home in the afternoon, did you have afternoon tea?
Yes, we did after... Now, when did we begin? Because at one time, the meal was 1:30, and then we'd a kind of high tea at 6 o'clock. And then, we were younger, I suppose, then. The grown-ups had bread and cheese and whiskey or raspberry vinegar, I think Aunt Mary used to drink. And what did Artie drink? I think she drank whiskey. Granny had whiskey, I know.
That's the way.
At 9 o'clock. Yes. Then after Granny died, we altered it rather. We had, Auntie altered it. We had a meal at 1 and tea at 4 and a supper meal at 7. And then at that supper meal, she had whiskey, I think. And if she wanted a little more when she went to bed, she had it. And we could have milk or we could have bread and cheese or anything, if we wanted any more of it. Generally, I think we generally had something satisfying at 7 o'clock and didn't require anything more. We'd very often fish. Fish was cheap in those days and fresh and very good. We were all rather keen about it. It was mostly fish, sometimes a beefsteak pie or cold tongue or something like that.
And then after your evening meal, did you sit around? I mean, supposing it was dark, did you sit around and embroider or what?
If it was summer, of course, we very often went out and perhaps finished mowing the grass or something like that.
If it was winter.
Yes. And if it was dark after 7, well, there was always sewing or mending or something to be done.
And what did Auntie do? Embroider?
Yes. Oh, she... No, Granny knitted. Granny knitted most beautifully. I don't know that Auntie did anything except read then.
And when did you go to bed? Roughly.
Between 9 and 10, I should think.
Between 9 and 10.
Oh, and then, of course, no, it was a little later than that I went out to play bridge. But I had to give up bridge because I couldn't, so many people had nothing to do that they wanted to play afternoon and evening. Mm. And I couldn't go and play in the afternoons. I really couldn't spare the time. No, nor did I want to either. I enjoyed it thoroughly. But I didn't want to play in the afternoons.
And this is bridge and not whist.
Mm.
Bridge.
Yes.
Auction.
Auction bridge it became, yes. Mm-hmm, And before it got really any further, I think the next step was contract bridge, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, that was much later.
Yes. Anyhow, I'd given it up at that time.
And if you were having a bath, did you have it in the morning or the evening?
Evening.
Evening. Before supper?
No.
When you went to bed?
Yes. I still have.
You still do?
And in cold weather, it's lovely, a hot bath, and you get into bed quite warm.
And so, John Crellin's question, did you have a hot water bottle?
Oh, yes. Winter and summer.
Winter and summer.
Always.
Stone and very large and very hard.
Yes. The rubber ones get cold so quickly.
Yeah, but they are very new, those.
And the stone ones are warm in the morning if you get it properly heated. Mm. And the funny thing is that Aunt Lizzie gave us some Indian silver bracelets. And if you have a rubber hot water bottle in bed, it turns them black.
That sounds like a fairy tale. Say it again, that if you have an Indian silver bracelet,
yes,
which you are wearing in bed.
Yes. I mean, you have, well, you put them on, you had your bath and your everything in them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but a rubber hot water bottle's in the bed and they go quite black. Well, nearly black, you know.
Yes,
they all go down.
They tarnish.
Yes.
And have you tried this with English silver?
No.
Well, what I'll do is I'll take a napkin ring or something.
Yes.
And I'll put it into bed and see what happens.
Yes.
With a rubber hot water bottle. Mm-hmm. And then I'll try a bit of Chinese silver.
Yes.
And see what happens to that. And I'll let you know. Because it sounds a bit of a fable to me.
Yes, I can't think why, but I know. I thought that was the reason. Funny.
Now, when you went shopping, did you always pay cash, or did you have an account at certain shops?
Oh, we always at certain shops, the butchers. And Aldous's, which originally was Dan Goldsmith's, who
yes.
built Riversdale.
Yes.
And I don't know. Oh, yes, and we always had a small account at Martin's, I think. Our auntie was very friendly with the forerunner of Martin's, who was a brew, and he was a town commissioner and very interested in Wesleyan, but very interested in all Mr. Peyton's work for the poor and fishermen and that kind of thing.
And when these accounts came in monthly,
yes.
were they paid by cash or were there checks in those days?
I think Auntie paid those all by check. I'm not very sure. I pay the butcher nowadays once a month, but I generally pay him by cash. Mm. But very often I pay all this by a check.
Mm.
And Martin... Well, one person doesn't need much, you know,
no,
really.
No.
Martin's, I pay cash. At least I pay it when it suits me. It doesn't suit him to wait and be paid when he brings the things, so he has to wait till it suits me to get it paid.
Yes, very sad. Very sad.
Hmm. They never seemed to mind waiting. I know I was owing some money at the combine for quite a while, and I said to Harry, ask Mr. Gelling to make out a bill and I'll pay it. And he did. And Harry came back having ordered some patent manure, I think it was, and he said, "Oh, Mr. Gelling, sir, it's all right, you'll pay. You'll pay when it suits you," that was it.
"You'll pay when it suits you." Yes. Very good.
Of course, if you've dealt with people for a long time, you'll know, they don't mind. They're not in a hurry if they're not small people.
And your aunt's income in those days, would this be mostly from mortgages?
Yes, I suppose it was, really. Our auntie, you see, having lived all her life with her mother, and Grandpapa had made his will when he was a rich man, and divided things equally round his family. The consequence was that when Granny died, Auntie got two shares, I think, instead of one. But she's a very small income, especially to these days. And I think she thought that 300, she'd had 400 a year, but she thought 300 a year should keep us going with a maid and a garden man once a week and so on. And she'd no idea really that what it cost to keep a place like this going.
No.
And Bobby Keg is back here, having retired, and in
Ballycrink.
Well, his father was the banker in the Isle of Man Bank at that time, and he said to Auntie, he said, "You could do much better reinvesting some of the money that you have invested. You get a better percentage and all the rest of it." And he was very good and very helpful, and she did have a better income. Of course, in comparison, food and things were very much cheaper then.
Yes.
And of course, wages, well...
What did you pay a maid?
I think old Garrett wage paid. Works here from 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening for 6 shillings a day.
This was what the sort of... the jobbing gardener fellow.
Yes. And a marvellous gardener he was. We always said he on farm or garden, he was very good, but he was so interested in the gardens. He grew the most marvellous onions, I can remember that. And also everything he grew seemed to flourish.
What did you pay a maid, for instance?
Oh, I think they got £12 a year.
Paid weekly or once
monthly.
A year?
Monthly.
Monthly. £1 a month. Yes.
It soon went up to about £18 a year, but I know in the beginning it was £12 a year.
And they'd be fairly well off on that, were they?
Yes.
Now
they were quite content. You see, it wasn't. There were, in comparison, there were very few things for them to spend their money on, really.
Yeah. Now, did your grandmother or your aunt Did they require your maid or maids to go to church on Sunday?
Yes.
Well, they were obliged to do so, were they?
As long as we had two, one of the two, they took turns of going to the morning service on Sunday.
And did they go with you in
the
trap?
No, they walked.
They walked, did they?
Yes.
So, and did they go to St. Paul's or St. Olive's?
They went to St. Paul's.
And
they, in those days, St. Olive's was too fashionable for maids or shop people either, I think, to go in the morning. They'd go in the evening, but not in the morning.
Really?
It was a very fashionable congregation. You'd put your best clothes on.
And so on a Sunday morning, one maid would start out to walk to church.
Yes.
And half an hour later, Auntie and you and Alice would set off in the trap.
Yes.
And then when the service was over, you'd come home in the trap and the maid would arrive half an hour after it.
Yes.
It makes you laugh now, doesn't it?
Yes.
Ah, dear.
I remember on one occasion the maid, the housemaid she was a Corlett, and cousin of Noel Corlett, I think, I'm sure she was. She always got out of church very quickly and went to her home, which was nearby, either in Pump Road or somewhere there, and had a cup of tea. And apparently it upset her, because she got as far as Richmond's Lane when she fell and hit her head against the hedge and fainted. And somebody came along here and said, "Your maid's lying in the road. I think she's hurt herself." So we took the bath chair and went down the road, Addison and I, and she's a gash on her head. And she was coming round, so we put her into the bath chair and wheeled her to the cottage hospital, which was fairly new then. And nurse, what was her name? Anyhow, she was the head of it, the matron, for the first matron, and for a long time, very good. She was really a marvelous nurse. She said, "Oh, put her to bed. I think that needs a stitch." So we put her to bed. They put her to bed, and we came home. And we went back in the afternoon to see what was happening, and here she was. They wanted her to remain till the morning, but she was insisting that she would get up. And so we said, "Oh no, she can." We left the bath chair there, we had done, and so we put her in the bath chair and brought her back here and put her to bed. She got up the following morning and did her work as usual.
Yes.
Proctor was the matron's name, Proctor. She was a marvellous nurse. One of the cousins broke her leg when she was cycling. She and Meg and Mary Gell were cycling somewhere near Loch Nye. And it was rather a rutty lane. And she got a bicycle in her rut and she fell over, and the pedal must have hit her ankle. Anyhow, she had poor bones, and it broke the bone and splintered it. And somebody came out from one of the houses and brought an eiderdown and put it on the road and got her onto the eiderdown while the doctor was being sent for. Dr. Barber went out and got her and he said, this is very nasty. I must get something. Dr. Barber wasn't keen on setting bones himself unless it was a simple fracture. And he said, this is a compound arrangement. And it had come, the one bone had come through the skin. She was taken to the hospital. She was there, 18 or more weeks. And Matron Proctor wouldn't let anybody attend to this but herself. They tried to fashion the splinter in, but it wouldn't take or something. I remember they gave Gladys the splinter afterwards in a little bottle and with a spirit, and said, yeah, you can have this as a memento of your stay in the cottage hospital. And she was, but of course Dr. Sutton set it and did what he could, and they were quite amused because he was awfully keen on a motor car and did a lot to his car himself, and his hands very often looked as if they needed a wash. Matron Proctor, when he came in, always arrived with a good-sized basin of hot water and soap and a towel, and you'll wash your hands, doctor, please, before you...
touch my patients.
Yes. And he would grin and say, oh, if it pleases you, or some remark like that. But the girl's aunt, Margaret, was there once or twice when he came in, and she was always amused. And she said, I must say, she said, he took it very well, you know. And I said, oh, Matron Proctor knows what he's up to, that he'll be fiddling with oil and all this, that and the other, and his hands very often look as if they needed a wash. But she was jolly careful that they should be. It healed marvellously. She was never bothered. She was slightly lame, and they gave her a sort of prescription for her shoe, a little bit on the sole and a little bit on the heel of that particular shoe. And it was very simple. She could buy a new pair of shoes and have this little bit added. And she could dance, but they warned her that she had very brittle bones and she better give up cycling altogether in case she had another accident. She never had. She died a year or two ago.
Did you ever go into Douglas to shop?
Very rarely. We never had any spare cash.
Oh, I see.
In those days, well, we made most of our own clothes. In fact, when we were younger, the only time we really had something new, I mean, our cousin Mrs. Reed had, dresses were very full and skirts were, you know, I don't know what, but anyhow, very often, one of hers would make two for one each for us of a plain kind of frock. She was very good in handing them over, and she had plenty of new clothes, plenty of money to spend on them. But the only new ones, really, that we had was when we went into black.
Yes, yes.
And that was about once in 5 years.
Mm. And how long did you wear black for after a bereavement?
Well, for Father, we wore it a year. And I think for Aunt Mary we wore it a year. I'm sure we did.
And for Granny?
And for Granny we wore it a year.
All day, every day?
Yes.
And hat to shoes?
Hmm.
Did you have black edge notepaper, for instance, for a year?
You mean...
Notepaper. Was your notepaper, was that edged black?
Oh, yes, I've got some black-edged envelopes, the remains of some of that, yes, in a drawer in the schoolroom now, and I wondered what I should do with them. Oh, they're not very many, you know what I mean. They're just an emblem of what there was.
It was a rather nice custom, I think.
Yes. Well, the country people make such remarks about present-day people showing no respect and all that kind of thing that the people gone, that I had this dark, when it's very nearly black, this dark coat and skirt, and so I've worn it ever since Dorothy went, and I shall wear it till Easter, and then after that. I'll have worn it very many. I'll have worn it 5 months, and Mrs. Kissick can't come in and say to me, "You're showing no respect."
Yes, 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 yes.
Harry the man, you know, it's awful excitement this week. One of his wife's brothers, one that they hardly knew in a way, because I think he lived somewhere near Crunkefaddy in a cottage down below the road, was found dead in the garden last Sunday sometime anyway. And of course, it appears that he'd been ailing for months, ever since the summer. And the neighbours, some neighbours who were very good to him, he was a bachelor and lived alone. And the neighbours were very good to him, and these people, the wife said, "I think I must go and see what's wrong." We're at, I don't know whether his name was Tom or something, "because there's no smoke this morning." And she went there, the cottage, and the door was open, and she went upstairs, and there was no one in. And then she went up the garden, or up the somewhere towards the road, because he always went up on a Saturday evening to collect his groceries, which were put just inside the hedge off the road, between the road and his cottage, you see. And there she found him. He'd evidently his heart had been bad, you see. So there's been all the fuss of a sort of inquest, and the brother John was so upset, he lives in Jerby, that he sent a message, or he went to see them, and said he had told the police to go to the Morrisons, that Harry would see to everything. Because I think their name is Neil, I'm not sure. And so I got a message yesterday to say that if the police wanted him, he wouldn't be with me today. But the police didn't want him. Thing is, they said the funeral could be on Friday, and so then there was the trouble of telling the rest of the people. And but John, apparently, who ought to have done it, would have nothing to do with it, and he went to the Morrisons and he said to his sister, "You can just tell Harry to get on with it. I can't do it." So Harry has been very important. Very. And it's rather funny. One thing brings back another thing. When Auntie had GFS class, There was one, what was her name? She was a kennel. She was the then police chief's daughter. What was her name? Maggie? Annie? It doesn't matter. And they were talking about weddings and funerals. One of the members had been married. And somebody turned to her and said, "Well, Annie, did you go to see the wedding?" Because she lived quite near St. Paul's, and the wedding was in St. Paul's. "No," she said, "I